Good morning, it's Abby104, and welcome to Folk Tales with me, Terry Bennett. My guest today, and we're sat in her kitchen in Stourbridge, is Hilary Townsend. Good morning, Hilary.
Good morning.
And is it right to describe you as a writer and a broadcaster and a lecturer, which is what some websites seem
yes,
to call you?
Yes, that's right. That's the sort of thing that describes me quite well.
And you have written various books in yes. your time, haven't you? Just tell us a little bit about your career as a writer.
Well, my first book was a guidebook to the Blackmore Vale, published by the Dovecot Press, and the publisher thought there'd never been a guidebook to the Blackmore Vale. Everybody's heard of Thomas Hardy and the south of Dorset, but not the north. So that was my first. I was commissioned to do that, and then the same publisher took a book about my childhood. And, of course, as you get older, you remember your past much more clearly. I can't remember where I put the milk jug 5 minutes ago, but I remember my past more clearly. And I wrote a book about my childhood. Well, then I came back to my mother's house in Stourbridge, and a lot of things had to be done to it. The roof threatened to fall down. It was medieval. Nobody knew that until the roof threatened to fall down. So I was desperate for money. I got grants, obviously, for the house, but I was desperate for money, so I wrote about anything that the editor would take, which was decent. So typically, of course, I wrote about Dorset, about North Dorset. And particularly, I sent work to North America and Canada, and the sort of stuff I wrote went well because I wrote about medieval houses, and they hadn't got any, so that went very well. And my latest book is called Stourbridge to Siberia and Other Places, and that's about my travels. I was lucky to be able to travel a lot in this period. So the book that came out this year is called Stourbridge to Siberia and Other Places.
And this is one of a number of books that you have, and you've already mentioned the Discover Dorset series.
Discover Dorset, yes.
And the Blackmore Vale Childhood.
Blackmore Vale Childhood, yes.
And then Silk Hay, which is yes. the cottage where you live in Stourbridge.
Restoring the house,
and
yes.
And restoring the house. So if we may, we'll wander through some of those as we do on this programme. But let's take your first record and we'll go from there. So you've chosen The Ash Grove, haven't you?
Yes.
And why this one?
Because we sang a lot of... I went to the school in Stourbridge, the primary school, and in those days there was a lot more singing. Singing was very much a feature of the timetable. We had singing two or three times a week. And we danced a lot of folk dances, and we also sang folk songs. And I thought The Ash Grove was absolutely beautiful, and I'd never forgotten it.
Right, that's as good a reason as any. Let's have it then. So the Ash Grove here.
Down yonder green valley, where streamlets meander, when twilight is fading, I pensively rove. Or at the bright noontide, in solitude wander, amid the dark shades of the lonely ash grove. Was there while the blackbird was joyfully singing, I first met my dear one, the joy of my heart. Around us for gladness the bluebells were ringing. Ah, then little thought I how soon we should part. Grows the bright sunshine o'er valley and mountain, still warbles the blackbird his note from the tree, still trembles the moonbeam on streamlet and fountain. But what are the beauties of nature to me? With sorrow, deep sorrow, My bosom is laden, all day I go mourning in search of my love. He echoes, oh tell me, where is the sweet maiden? She sleeps neath the green turf down by the ash grove. Green valley where stream lets meander, when twilight is fading, I pensively rove. Or at the bright noontide in solitude wander, amid the dark shades of the lonely ash grove. Was there while the blackbird was joyfully singing, I first met my dear one, the joy of my heart. Around us for gladness the bluebells were ringing. Ah, then little thought I how soon we should part.
So that's the Ash Grove, as chosen by my guest today on Folk Tales, and that's Hilary Townsend, who's an author and many other things besides. Hilary, we were just talking about your publications as an author, but let's go right back to the beginning. Where were you born? Are you your local lass?
Yeah, I come from the Stourbridge.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I spent my first 18 years here. All my family came from Stourbridge. My first home was at Hewlett's Farm, and then we came to live in Stourbridge, and I went to the village school. And I've always loved Stourbridge. It's got a wonderful atmosphere and a sense of community.
So you were born into a farming family?
Born into a farming family. All my father's family were farmers, yes, in the Backmore Vale.
And is that a large family?
Well, I had one sister, but that was all. But before that, families weren't especially large, but there were a number of them. And they were always dairy farmers in the Blackmore Vale.
So early life was actually on the farm, was it?
Oh, in my early life was on the farm, and then we moved into Stourbridge. My father gave up farming, he wasn't very well, and we moved into Stourbridge to be near the school, which was lovely.
Yes, so Stourbridge School back in those days was, well, probably a lot different than the school now is.
Yes, it was much smaller, and it was many ways very different, but it was always very good. I was always grateful for my early education because it was so thorough. You know, reading, writing and arithmetic. And we were absolutely drilled.
So that was very traditional?
Very traditional. Church of England school.
Yes.
So we learnt the catechism off by heart.
I doubt whether that's taught in the same way these days. So happy childhood memories of
very happy
school.
Very happy indeed.
But then the time came to move on to another school, presumably, in due course.
Yes, eventually I went to the grammar school at Gillingham.
At Gillingham, I see.
And went by train on the old Slow and Doubtful.
Oh, gosh, the old S&D, yes. And the days when Stourbridge had a station.
Oh, had a station, yes. And the porters were so good. On cold, wet mornings, they'd take us into the porter's hut by the fire. And, it was a great romance about the old Slow and Doubtful.
So Gillingham Grammar School, as it was then.
Yes.
Again, good memories of that?
Oh, very good. Very good indeed. And the masters, a lot of masters have been called up for the war. So the older masters remained. And I've always thought I basically went to a boys' school because girls hadn't been admitted until after they got the vote in 1918. It was entirely a boys' school. So it taught Latin, did a lot of sport. Very good discipline, but the staff wanted us to do well, and I loved it.
Yes.
I was very lucky.
Was that a big school then? I imagine
it's about 350, I think.
I see. Okay, so yeah, moderate size, I suppose, in those days.
Yes.
Were you academically gifted?
Oh, not gifted, but I loved English and history. But they were the two things I loved most. And we had exceptionally good teachers of both subjects. Mm-hmm. So they really inspired me.
So again, good memories of that time.
Good memories.
Yes. And you then took examinations and yes. Were they O-levels in those days? Or
well, we didn't call them O-levels. No. They were called school certificate at O-level right. And higher school certificate
yes.
For what we now call A-levels.
Right. And what were your early intentions? Did you have a thought of a career?
No, well, I always wanted to write. Ever since I was a child of about 7, as soon as I learned how to write, I wanted to do it. So that meant I was very involved with English and history particularly.
That was to form your early thoughts of career. So when it came to leave school,
yes,
what were your thoughts? Was it university?
Well, I went to university at Southampton, which was then part of the University of London, and absolutely loved that. I took a registered in an honours English degree, which was very interesting, and it was a very interesting time to be at university because the men had come back from the war, and it was a very romantic atmosphere. You know, the returned soldiers didn't, they wanted pretty little girls in long dresses that they could send flowers to. It's very difficult to describe it now, but that was what it was like. Because the war was over, we had a lot of fun. You know, everybody was trying to make up for lost time.
Yes.
And we went to dance. We either had formal balls with long dresses, or every other Saturday we had just an informal dance and wore short dresses. But almost invariably in those days, the dances ended with that lovely Maori tune, "Now is the Hour." And I've always associated that with university.
Well, that leads us very neatly into your second record choice, which is that piece, isn't it?
Yes.
And that brings back memories from that era.
Yes. It? Oh, yes. Yes.
Thank you.
that was Now Is the Hour, the old Maori tune, chosen by my guest today, Hilary Townsend. So, Hilary, we've left off. You are at university in Southampton, reading English, presumably.
English, yes.
Yes, I see. With a view to becoming an author or
well,
a writer,
well, I always
or what?
Wanted to write from the age of about seven, when I learnt to write. I thought, this is good. This is what I want to do. Yes. But, of course, life tends to get in the way. I had to earn my living. So the wonderful 3 years at Southampton came to an end.
Tell us, just before we move on, about life at university. Again, it's a little while ago now. Universities have changed quite a bit. Were those enjoyable days?
It was.
Come of age, as some people do these days?
Yes. Oh, it's a wonderful atmosphere. And, you see, everybody was so glad to be out. The war was over and we could do our own thing and concentrate on having a good time and working hard. One's boyfriends, if possible, were ex-service, who didn't reckon to go out with schoolboys. And because the ex-service men generally had an old banger or a motorbike, and they wanted to enjoy life too. It was a much more innocent enjoyment of life. It was something that absolutely delighted me.
And you were away from home for
away from home, yes. Now,
time.
That made me very homesick, of
right,
course.
I see.
I was homesick for 40 years until I got back to Strawbridge.
Oh, my gosh. Mm. All right, we'll come to that in due course. But in the meantime, then, you're at university in Southampton. You then have a degree in English. Mm-hmm. What happened next?
I didn't know what to do. And in those days, women, the only careers open to women were teaching, nursing and secretarial work. So I chose secretarial work, spent 6 months in London doing an intensive secretarial course at a place called St. Godric's College in Hampstead. And that was very good, a very useful thing to do. And I found it very useful ever since. So eventually, after the secretarial course, I went into industry and worked for a furniture industry in London for several years. But homesickness didn't go away, and Winfrith Atomic Energy Establishment opened, and I was able to work there and leave London. I didn't make a Londoner. I went to work at Winfrith, which, of course, was the white hope of the fuel industry, and it was a wonderful opportunity to be back in Dorset, near my family.
This was in the early days of
the early
atomic
days.
Energy.
I joined in 1959,
yes.
And they were getting the site together and putting it together.
So it was all very new in those days.
All very
atomic
new, yes.
Energy,
very,
wasn't it?
Very new.
I see. So you'd been a secretary for a few years.
I was
years,
secretary for a few years, yes.
And that was a bit of a means to an end, really, was it?
Means to an end, yes, it was.
Yes. You hadn't ever had a great ambition to become a secretary. You were
looking
to be an author.
No, I just had to do it to earn my living.
Yes.
But in that time, I was very lucky at Winfrith because I was able to train as a personnel manager. They don't call them personnel managers now, but that's what we called them. And that was a very interesting training indeed. Then, of course, Winfrith started to run down, so they didn't want personnel managers. They wanted to get rid of the personnel.
You'd been there a few years before
that
happened.
Yes, I had.
Yes, mm-hmm. So you were still pursuing a career to earn money, basically, rather than a writing career at this point. Yes,
I was very much absorbed in personal management in industry because I found it interesting and that's what I trained for.
You were in Dorset anyway.
I was in Dorset, yes.
Which was good.
I took the course in Bournemouth, and I enjoyed being back in Dorset very much.
So you were a personnel manager at the Atomic.
I trained as a personnel manager. Yes. I never got to. I was doing personnel work, but I didn't really get to be working as a manager because they were getting rid of managers.
Yes, I see. Okay, so the timing didn't quite work out.
I did personnel work all the time I was training, and that was what got me into it.
Yes. So how long were you with the Atomic Energy Authority?
Oh, 15 years.
I see. Okay. So you were there quite a while.
Yes, I was.
And you were living, presumably, somewhere down around Wool.
Yeah, I was living in Dorchester.
At this time, were you pursuing writing in your spare time?
In a vague way.
Yes.
I was always writing with the work I was doing, writing up reports on accommodation for students and things like that. But it wasn't the writing I wanted to do.
No, I see.
I never lost sight of the fact that I wanted to be a full-time writer. But in those years, it was, I suppose, very difficult to develop my writing career. I had several shots at it. I took some courses and a London School of Journalism course, but it was always there in the background.
You mentioned then that Winfrith started to wind down.
Yes.
And so that eventually meant that you had to move on again.
Yes, yes.
So what happened after that?
So I retrained as a lecturer in management subjects, because that was very lucky, because the personal management training qualification I'd taken enabled me to add a short course of lecturing, and that was all came together very well.
Where did you do that training?
I did the training in the Weymouth Technical College. I had a short course in further education teaching, which in concentrating on industry, which was very interesting, because if you got men who had got families and they wanted qualifications, they worked so hard and they knew so much about the industry, much more than I did. So I loved that.
So you did that course, and did that then lead you into another branch of work?
That enabled me to lecture in management subjects in a technical college.
Yeah, that's what you then did, was it?
That's what I ended up doing some years in the technical college in Frome.
Oh, in Frome?
In Frome, yes.
So you had to move then from...
No, I kept my house in Dorchester and stayed in Frome all the week and came home at weekends and holidays.
Yes, I see.
And I enjoyed that very much. Yes. They were a great crowd of people. And I loved teaching adults. I was never interested in teaching children, but I loved teaching adults. They were so interesting and they worked so hard.
And did you find that rewarding?
Oh, very rewarding, yes. Very rewarding indeed.
Yes. And these presumably were aspiring managers, were they? That you...
Well, they were. They were a mixture. The technical college is always a tremendous mixture of subjects and the students you get, because a lot of them went into various industry and business later on. They left us to go to management schools. But also, at the same time, we had a lot of people came to us who had missed out on education. And this was their second chance. And I found that very rewarding indeed. When a young man worked in a factory and he couldn't bear it, and his wife said if he didn't give it up, she couldn't live with him. And they had several children, so of course they needed the money. And came to us and left his job. And then he got taken on part-time, teaching mentally defective children. And he realised that's what he wanted to do. But he couldn't start the training without O-levels, so he came to us for his O-levels. And that sort of thing happened a lot. And that was great, to be able to build careers for people who had missed out on education.
Yes, and see their confidence develop and
yes.
Get greater fulfillment in what they
were
doing.
Oh, yes, it was wonderful.
How long did you do that?
13 years.
Oh, right, okay. Quite a while then. Yes.
Quite a while,
and
yes.
All the time you were staying up in Frome during
the week and coming home on the holidays.
But home was still Dorchester at
home
that point.
Home was Dorchester, yes.
And Frome then, how did that all come to an end?
The college was closed. It was amalgamated with the comprehensive school, which I wasn't qualified to teach in. So
I see. Right.
I was very glad that I was offered the chance to retrain as a lecturer in management subjects. That was the obvious progression after that.
So what happened then when the college did close? What did you then do?
I wanted to come back to Stourbridge. I inherited my mother's house in a high street, a house called Silk Hay, where I was made redundant, given redundancy money, and set about intending to live in Stourbridge. And then the house has got huge stone tiles, medieval stone tiles. Nobody knew how old it was. And all that threatened to fall down to the street. So I had to do something about it, and I went to County Hall. The house was listed, fortunately. So I went to County Hall, and they sent me one of the planning officers called Pamela Cunnington, who became quite well known as a writer about medieval buildings. This was her period. She knew exactly what she'd found. She got up in the roof, and when she came down, she says, "Well, you do realise this is one end of a medieval hall house for the Tudor extension?" "No," I said, "I had no idea." And she was marvellous. She was determined to save every stick and stone of that house. And we got the roof, the battens were giving way, you see, for the stones, and we got the roof replaced. This was while I was working at Frome, so I still couldn't live there. So we had a very good tenant. And then the college closed. I was offered redundancy. And at the same time, the tenant their tenant found their own house and didn't want to renew the agreement. So it all came together, and I was able to come back here to Stalbridge to live. So I thought that was the end of all my problems with the house. But it turned out that a highway drain had been leaking into the foundations for about 30 years. And we had mould growing up the walls, and all the floors and ceilings and had to come up, and all the plaster off the walls. So we had several months of getting this put straight before I was able to live here full time. And that was in, I came back in 1987 to live in October or so, in 1987. And I've lived here ever since.
Let's break and have your third record, shall we? And then we'll talk a little bit more about that. This is Lyndon Lee, you've chosen, with a William Barnes connection.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, I'm a member of the William Barnes Society. My father was born at the next farm to William Barnes's Pentridge Round the River. And I've always loved his dialect and his approach to life. But I particularly loved Lyndon Lee because, being in industry some time, what resonated with me was the verse in Lyndon Lee, "Let other folk make money faster in the air of darkroom towns. I don't fear a peevish master, though no man may heed my frowns, for I be free to go abroad and take again my homeward road, to where for me the apple tree do lean down low in Lyndon Lee." And that put together the awfulness of the Industrial Revolution and the fact that there was hope in places like Dorset where the Industrial Revolution hadn't come.
All right, let's have the track. Lyndon Lee, then.
To waste so
Right, so that was Lyndon Lee, as chosen by my guest today on Folk Tales, Hilary Townsend. And Hilary, you were reflecting there that that has the strong William Barnes connection. Yeah. We should perhaps say that William Barnes was a Dorset poet, wasn't he, who lived...
He was a remarkable man.
He lived in the Victorian era, really.
He lived in Bagburn, near Sturminster, and he went to school in Sturminster. And he had tremendous talent for many things. And it was said that he eventually mastered the basics of 60 different languages. He was a linguist, a craftsman, and he became a schoolteacher and was very much and much revered as a schoolteacher.
And a Church of England priest as well, I believe.
He became a priest eventually, much later. He loved stories. His life is absolutely beautiful. And he married and had a family and moved to Dorchester from Mere, where he wrote Lyndon Lee, and had a school in Dorchester. But eventually, his wife died and the school failed. But in that time, he was working towards the priesthood, taking exams as a tenure fellow. And eventually, of course, he was able to be ordained, and he had the living of Whitcomb and Winterbourne Came, and that was where he was for the last years of his life. But he has been very underrated. He was a philosopher, a writer about industry, and this tremendous linguistic gift, and also a very, very kind and good man.
You found yourself in the late 80s then,
yes,
living back in Stourbridge,
yes,
which I guess was fantastic because that home territory, wasn't
Home territory, yes, I'd come home.
Albeit you were in a house that needed quite a bit of work doing to it, and that then took a while to achieve, I
would
guess.
Yes, it did.
Quite a number of years.
Yeah, I spent 30 years restoring the house from beginning to end.
And what did that involve? What sort of work? You've mentioned the roof.
Yes, the roof threatened to fall down. A highway drain had been leaking into the foundations of the house for about 30 years. And that led to terrific amount of work. But also, of course, it revealed a Crusader stone on the wall, which we think was a reused stone that was used to build the room that comes out into the road. And there was a crude sketch of a Crusader knight which could have been left over from the Knights Templar at Temple Combe. It could have come from there. We don't know. We can't be sure. But it's a crude sketch of whoever did it. Wasn't much of an artist. But it's a crude sketch of a Crusader knight of about 1200. We found that in the course of all this restoration.
Mm-hmm. So the house goes back, as you say, to medieval times.
Yes.
But it's now looking very, very habitable.
Yes. Oh, yes.
But you were able to live here all through the restoration, were you?
Yes. Well, most of it. When we had the roof done, of course, I had to be out of the way for a bit. But most of the time I was living here.
And you now, you have your mother's house then.
Yes.
In totally habitable format.
Oh, yes.
And you're
back in
Stourbridge. So all is well with the world. Yes. So at this time then, you'd come out of Froome College. That was your most recent employment. Did you do anything after that?
Well, that was when I became a full-time writer. You see, when I came back to Silk Hay, because I'd been made redundant, I was able to write full-time. I had to write about what I knew. What I knew was North Dorset and my childhood, which was becoming more easily remembered as the years went by, and the restoration of this house. So that's what I worked on. Those are the books I published. I also wrote a lot of freelance journalism about Dorset, and a lot of the work I sent to this medieval house went to North America, and it went very well because I haven't got any medieval houses there.
A rich seam of interest.
Yes, very.
Did you manage to develop your writing career reasonably easily? Because it's one thing wanting to write, but you've got to find somebody to publish it.
I was lucky, I think. I had Delphicut Press ask, first of all, commissioning me to write the guidebook. And then the publisher took...
This was Discover Dorset.
Discover Dorset, yes. Then the publisher took Blackmore Vale Childhood.
And that was... Well, 2006 was the Blackmore Vale Childhood. And 2004 was the Discover Dorset.
Right.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, that's right.
You kept on writing.
I kept on writing. Well, then, of course, having all the problems about the house and having kept a day-to-day diary all the time the builders were here, I had a great deal material. And I also had a lot of difficulties in restoring this house. Everything that could go wrong went wrong. So that was the subject of my next book. The publisher had retired by then, so I self-published that. It's called...
Silk Hay, One Woman's Fight for Architectural Heritage.
That's right. I can never remember that.
It's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it? And that was 2012 that was published.
Yes.
Yes. So that really is a walk through the process of restoring a very old house.
Yes. And, of course, it wasn't easy because the builders, who were very professional and highly qualified... I'd never had a woman client before, so they tended to think that what they were doing was no business of mine. And they didn't tell me things that they should have done until we sorted that out.
So they didn't think you needed to know then.
Well, it didn't occur to them, I think.
You've mentioned the Stourbridge to Siberia.
Yes, that's the book that came out this February.
Yes, I see.
That was an account of my travels all my life, from a school trip after the war until about 1990, I suppose. Yes. This is the first volume of the travel.
And you have done a lot of travelling, haven't you?
I have, yes.
You're an enthusiastic traveller?
Yes, yes, I have. Mm.
Yes, and you're still travelling?
Well, not at the moment.
Not as much.
Not so much.
I think I read somewhere in the quick read-through that you were on the last ship to go to St. Helena.
Yes, I went to St. Helena in 2008, I think it was, with a friend who was keen to go there. And then we went on the ship, which is now out of commission because they're building an airport.
It was an airport, yes.
It isn't out of commission yet, but I think it soon will be.
Right.
So I was very lucky to go on the long voyage from Cape Town.
It's several days, isn't it?
Oh, 8 days, yes.
Life now, then, is a little more relaxed, is it?
I've accomplished the things I set out to do. I've become a full-time writer. I've restored this house, and I'm living in Stourbridge. So those were three things I set out to do.
Mm. Okay. Let's take your fourth record, which is Rosebud in Summer.
Yes.
By the Yetis.
The Yetis.
Why the Yetis?
Well, they borrowed the scores from the museum, and they played the instruments... Oh, they borrowed the instruments from the museum.
Which museum?
Dorsetshire, the county museum, that had belonged to Thomas Hardy and his father. So they did these wonderful discs of the folk songs that were used and the dances that were played by the Hardy family. And the Rosebud in Summer was a beautiful, beautiful melody. And that's all stuck in my mind from that time.
Okay. Well, let's have the record. The Rosebud...
In Summer.
By the Yetis.
Thank you.
So that was A Rosebud in Summer by the Yetis, as chosen by my guest today, Hilary Townsend. Hilary, we're more or less up to date, I think, but we've maybe missed a couple of bits. You've done some broadcasting in your life as well, haven't
yes,
you?
Yes,
tell us about that.
I wrote a feature to mark the centenary of the death of William Barnes.
Which would have been 1986 then.
Yes, 1986. Mm. And I enjoyed that very much. I also gave four talks about growing up in Stalbridge. It was in the days when the BBC did talks quite a lot, and I gave four consecutive ones, and that attracted quite a lot of interest. That was based really on the book that I'd written about my childhood.
So what does life comprise now? Are you still writing? Have you got another book in the offing?
Yeah, I have. Yes, so the next version of the Travels, the next volume of the Travels.
Oh, I see. So this is taking us through the various places you've been.
Well, I went to Nepal. I've been to New Zealand twice, which I enjoyed very much. Hawaii, St Helena twice. And the most exciting, I think, of all was the Stalbridge to Siberia, the setting off with a friend on a Great Whale Travels excursion, and going by train to Warsaw and then to Berlin and then to Moscow, and then going overnight, 4 days on the train, right across Russia from Moscow to Irkutsk. And then that was the first of those travels. Then I did that again a bit later and was able to extend it to Mongolia and China. And that was very interesting.
It sounds fascinating. if a little bit daunting, maybe.
Well, we went with the group who'd organised everything. And I went with a very good friend who's dead now. It was very well organised and very, very interesting.
All right, so you're preparing the next volume of your travels.
Yes.
Yes, and taking life a little easier now?
Oh, yes, much. Yes. Much easier. Oh, I enjoy life in Stalbridge very much because there's always so much going on and people make it fun.
It's a nice place to live.
Oh, it's an excellent place to live in. And my original family, of course, I've spent a lot of time with, and a certain amount of freelance journalism still, yes. Much less than formerly.
Hilary, I think we got right up to date, so we're running a little bit short on time. So your final track, which we'll play out with,
yes,
is Haste to the Wedding, again by the Yetis.
That's all also on the Thomas Hardy track.
Right.
And which is a lovely, interesting tune.
Just tell us about this one. Why have you chosen it?
Well, when I lived in Dorchester, I went to the Folk Song and Dance Society meetings and learnt English folk dances. And this one, Haste to the Wedding, was a dance we used to dance to there, a typical Dorset dance. And then when this Yetis track came out, The Rosebud in Summer always stuck in my mind as such a beautiful melody. And it was from the series that the Hardy family, Thomas Hardy and his father, would have played at parties.
The Haste to the Wedding is another one in the same.
Haste to the Wedding is a very well-known Dorset dance. I think it's Dorset.
We'll play out with that.
Yes.
And Hilary Townsend, thank you very, very much for coming in and talking to us. And we hope your further book materialises very soon.
Yes.
And thank you very much.
Thank you.
'Twas Christmas, and the Phoenix Inn was lit with tapers tall. For 30 of the trooper men had vowed to give a ball, as theirs had done, 'twas handed down, when lying in the self-same town ere Bonaparte's fall. That night the throbbing soldier's joy, the measured tread and sway of fancy lad and maiden coy, reached Jenny as she lay beside her spouse, till springtide blood seemed scouring through her like a flood that whisked the years away. She rose, arrayed, and decked her head where the bleached hairs grew thin. Upon her cap two bows of red she fixed with hasty pin. Unheard, descending to the street, she trod the flags with tune-led feet and stood before the inn. Thank you.
not forever.